soon, they tell us. Some of you have house alarms in your home. When we bought our home, we've been in the neighborhood right behind here for 12 years. When we bought our home, the people that we bought it from were very much into security. There were alarms everywhere in that house, things that you would walk on in the hallway. And it took us months just to figure out the security system. And finally got it dismantled. We had a little problem in our neighborhood that the system kept going off every time there was a little earthquake or movement in the house. It would go off, and we could never figure it out. We finally got rid of it. We had one of those little signs that you see many people have that are in the front yards of many homes, that there's a security company that comes by and checks on that home. And we didn't have that anymore, but I put the sign proudly out in front of our house thinking it would provide security until it was finally stolen by somebody else who was looking for security. We are in our fourth week of the study of Psalms, and we're going to be in the study of Psalms this week, this whole summer, and I hope you're enjoying it as much as I am. We're going to have a tremendous time. We started by taking a look at the idea that the Psalms are really there to help believers learn to pray, and that one of the things we can do as God's people is learn to pray the Psalms and integrate them into our walk with Jesus. Reed then took us through a study of how the Psalms are really very much a book of praise, and we're going to take a look at that theme again in a few weeks. But he showed us how the Psalms can help us praise correctly God and how it can help us to worship. And then last Sunday in the park, we touched on this theme of thanksgiving and how many of the Psalms are thankful in their demeanor before the Lord because of what God has done for us. Well, today we come to the theme of confidence or security in God. It is a huge theme in the Psalms. It is all throughout the book, and the authors of the Psalms seem to talk about over and over again this idea that one's security, one's confidence, one's safety is to be found in God alone. And the author of the Psalms have made this tremendous discovery that the only sure basis for security, the only sure basis for confidence is to be found in a relationship with God. Now, the beauty of the Psalms is that they describe spiritual realities in poetic language. And many of us don't do that well with poetry, at least certainly I would say I don't. Poetry is a bit of a stretch for me. But one of the things I've been concerned about in preparing for some of these teachings is that we might over-parse the text and delve too deeply into the text and not let the beauty of the words simply speak to us. They're beautiful, beautiful words. So let's begin in Psalm 27 and allow the poetry to speak to our hearts as to how we might be people who have confidence in God. I do want you to know that I'm going to skip Psalm 23 that was in our study guides this week, and I'm going to skip it for a good reason. Reed asked me to, and I always do what Reed asks. And in about 3 weeks, when he gets back from vacation, he's going to be teaching on Psalm 23 because we're going to come back to this theme of confidence. So we're going to look primarily at Psalm 27 and Psalm 62 in the next couple of minutes. Psalm 27. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evil men advance against me to devour my flesh, when my enemies and my foes attack me, they will stumble and fall. Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then, David says, I will be confident. One thing I ask of the Lord, this is what I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord, and to seek Him in His temple. For in the day of trouble, He will keep me safe in His dwelling. He will hide me in the shelter of His tabernacle and set me high on a rock. We have this beautiful picture of one who is being plagued by enemies, and the Lord sets him on a rock where his enemies can't come to him. Then my head will be exalted above the enemies who surround me. At His tabernacle I will sacrifice with shouts of joy. I will sing and make music to the Lord. Spiritual confidence is described in such a great way in this text, and it's described primarily as the opposite of fear. We sang Psalm 62 a few minutes ago. Ruth took us through that, and the same idea is there, where when one has confidence in God, fear is something that leaves them. Verse 1, whom shall I fear? Of whom shall I be afraid? Verse 3, my heart will not fear. In verse 3 again, he says, even then I will be what? Confident. And that fear is something that leaves. And yet, at the same time, we have to realize that in the Psalms, and I could take you into any number of Psalms, where it appears the psalmist really is afraid. There's something definitely to be afraid of. A couple of observations about this psalm. Number one, there are real and concrete things that David is dealing with. There are, the text tells us, evil men who are out to get him. They want to kill him. There's not vague anxiety, there's not vague fears, but real concrete situations. Secondly, I want you to notice that the author of the Psalms, and here David in particular, at times were very afraid. They were frightened, and for a good reason. Some of you this afternoon may be saying, well, Steve, I got some stuff in my life too. It's nice to talk about confidence, but I have some things in my life that are causing great fear and anxiety in my life. I want you to understand that when David or the other authors of Scripture are faced with bad situations, dangerous situations, and the very real emotion of fear that would come upon them, what happens is that their deep-seated faith in the sovereignty of God creates a confidence in them that wins the day. And it's based in the character of God. Do you know that term, the sovereignty of God? I used that in the first service, and one of the kids said I could hear. He said it loud enough for a lot of people to hear. Mom, what's that mean? And I guess that's one of the beauty of having kids in the service. And so I defined it. The sovereignty of God simply means that God is in control of everything, that nothing takes God by surprise, that God is the all-powerful one. And because of that, the psalmists have confidence and security in this God because of his character. It's not something that we can muster up. I don't want to stand before you this evening and say, you guys, you've got to be more confident. Now get out there and just really work at it. It's not something that we can muster up with our own power. It's a confidence in another and in the character of God. The best illustration that I can think of is the illustration of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And if you don't know that story, it is one of the marvelous stories in the Old Testament, Daniel chapter 3. And after the deportation of many of the best and the brightest and the youngest of Israel, Babylon swept into Israel and deported many, many of the people, the young people in particular. A lot of the Jews found themselves in Babylon under the rule of King Nebuchadnezzar. And in that country, these three young men and many of the other Jews were in trouble because some of them decided to not bow down and worship the golden image. There's idolatry in the land. And there's somewhat of a plot. It's a fascinating story to read in the book of Daniel. But eventually, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, three young men, say to King Nebuchadnezzar, "We will not bow and worship your God. We won't do it." And there's kind of a standoff, and eventually they realize that their lives are going to be taken from them. They're going to be thrown into a fiery furnace and be killed because they won't bow down to this idol. And one of the great lines, I think, in the Old Testament is found where these young men say to the king of Babylon, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve," listen to this, "the God we serve is able to save us from it." That's sovereignty. "He is able, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king." This is a confidence that is based in the character of God. They're confronted with somewhat of a war between Yahweh, the God they serve, and another god, an idol that they are commanded to bow down and worship. And they say, no, we will worship the one true God. Our God is able to rescue us. And then there's this, you can almost see it in the text, this pause, where these three young men probably think a little bit, well, what would happen if he doesn't? And so they add this little addendum. "But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you have set up." Now, that's just a beautiful illustration of the confidence that these three young men had in the sovereignty and the all-powerfulness of God. "He is able," they say. "But even if he doesn't, even if in his sovereignty he chooses to let us burn, we want you to know we're not going to bow down, because that's not a real God." So they understood correctly the sovereignty of God, the fact that God was all-knowing and all-powerful, and because of that, they had confidence in what we would say is a very, very bleak situation. One of the things I've been worried about, and I always try to get little updates of how the home groups in the church are going, and one of the things that's just concerned me a little bit this week, I've heard a little bit of the studies that we've had on confidence, and I want you to understand that when we talk about confidence spiritually, we're not talking in psychological categories. Many home groups, I think, got into a bit of a discussion about whether or not they were confident sorts of people. For the purposes of our study here this evening, it doesn't matter if you're a confident sort of person or you're not confident. This is not based on personality or temperament or whether or not you have good self-esteem. There might be time for another discussion of that. I don't know. But not here. The confidence that the psalmist is describing is not based on temperament or personality, but the confidence that's described here is based on the character of God. He is the sovereign one. He is able. And we trust in that great, great truth. So please avoid that tension when you talk through some of these themes in the Psalms. It's about God. Well, turn to Psalm 62, and let's continue and look at this great psalm. We just sang it a few moments ago. Let me read the first 9 verses. Another psalm of confidence and security. The psalmist says, "My soul finds rest in God alone. My salvation comes from Him. He alone is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will never be shaken. How long will you assault a man? Would all of you throw him down, this leaning wall, this tottering fence? They fully intend to topple him from his lofty place. They take delight in lies. With their mouths they bless, but in their hearts they curse." And the psalmist says it again. "Find rest, O my soul, in God alone. My hope comes from Him. He alone is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will not be shaken. My salvation and my honor depend on God. He is my mighty rock, my refuge. Trust in Him at all times, O people. Pour out your hearts to Him, for God is our refuge." If you're given to underlining the Bible, underline those 4 words: rest, salvation, rock, fortress, all of which point to the character of God. All of these images are to bring to mind the steadfast sovereignty, the unmovable sovereignty of the God of the Bible. The author says 4 times in this brief few verses that I just read, God alone, God alone, God alone, God alone. He finds his security, his confidence in God alone. This metaphor of the rock is such a beautiful picture of stability, of course. And I think this same picture, this same metaphor is picked up in the New Testament in Ephesians 3 and 1 Peter chapter 2. Where Paul and the Apostle Peter both use this idea of a cornerstone, or Peter uses the idea of a capstone, kind of the foundation of a building. That would be the keystone on which a structure would be built that holds it all together, that gives it stability. And this same image is picked up in the New Testament that we find here in the Psalms, that one's confidence is to be found in the rock, the stability that is God alone. Well, over and over again, the Psalms point to this truth. One more Psalm. Keep your finger in Psalm 22, because I'm going to come back to the last couple of verses in that. But keep your finger there and turn to one last Psalm, Psalm 121. There are so many we could read, but let me just look at this one briefly with you. 8 verses, Psalm 121. Just another Psalm of confidence, this dependency upon God. "I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from?" the psalmist asks. "My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth." There's no ambiguity about this text. You don't have to be a biblical genius to understand what the psalmist is saying. His confidence, his security, his help comes from God. And that God is the maker of heaven and earth. "He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber." And probably what's happening here, a lot of the pagan deities at this time were thought to be pagan deities who would sleep. And so some of the worshipers who were not worshiping the God of the Bible would think that their God might be asleep at times. And they would even have moments when they would try and wake him. And the psalmist here says, our God doesn't sleep. "Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and your going, both now and forevermore." Over and over again, we see that the Psalms point to the fact that we are to be people who have confidence in God because of His character. It's not about us. It's about Him. I've told this story before, and I want to do it again because I think it illustrates this point so well. As I think some of you know, I've told a few stories about this. About 6 years ago, a whole group of guys in our church got interested in playing roller hockey. And the vast majority of the guys that were interested in playing roller hockey had absolutely no experience, and we were bad. We were very bad. There were a couple of guys in the church who'd played ice hockey as little boys and had let it go for many, many years, and so they kind of carried the team somewhat. But we were all learning. At one point, our church had 3 roller hockey teams. That's amazing. It says something about our body. The team I was on was called the Lambs. Well, it says something. The other team that I was not invited to play on was called the Sons of Thunder, out of the book of Acts. And we had all these biblical names for our teams, and we lost a lot. When you play in a city league, it doesn't take too long before you get to know the guys, maybe by name or at least visually, who are playing against you. And as the months went on and our teams began to play in these leagues, we would get to know visually some of the other teams. I'll never forget, after playing about a year, we jumped up a league. We'd gone up one division to the next harder division, and we'd been losing games by many, many goals, and it had been a bleak season. And as we were doing that and playing these games, we would play out. It was out in Goleta, and there would be a long hallway that people would walk in and begin to sit on a bench and get dressed. And I'll never forget one game where I think we'd lost 3 or 4 games in a row, and things didn't look too good for that night either. And our team is getting dressed and putting on our gear, and nobody's talking, nobody's smiling. We're all brothers in Christ, but we're not sharing a word together. We're just kind of putting our gear on. And down the bench a little bit further is the other team, and they're laughing and joking, and they're happy because they know they're going to win. It's as simple as that. And we're getting dressed and getting ready for this game, and then it happened. This guy walked in from our church on our team, comes walking down the aisle. He was here at the 4 o'clock service. His name is Johan. Johan is from Sweden. Johan was born with a hockey stick in his hand. And it was fascinating in just a few moments to see things change. All of a sudden, that bench began to get quiet. And they're looking because they know the man's here. Johan's come. And our guys are like, hey, it's going to be a great game tonight. And whoa, and we're laughing and we're slapping each other and we're having fun. What happened? We had a complete change in confidence that had absolutely nothing to do with a change in our abilities. In those few moments, I didn't become any better hockey player. Our confidence was based on the ability of another who came alongside of us. This is something like what happens in our confidence with Jesus. It's not about you. And if you think that spiritually you've just got to muster up a bunch of confidence, you've missed the point. It's about God's character. The sovereign one who comes alongside us and puts confidence into our lives spiritually because of who he is, because of what he's done. We had an interesting question in our home group, and I'm going to end with this in the next couple of moments. But we had a good time in our home group this week and read some of these Psalms and talked about confidence. And finally, Marcy Richardson said, you know, I understand the text and the beautiful language and all these beautiful metaphors about confidence, and I understand that we're supposed to be confident in the Lord and our walk with Jesus, but what if you don't feel this confidence? What if you need more confidence? She wanted a little more practicality to all of this. And so I have 3 suggestions for all of us on how we can develop a little bit more confidence spiritually. So just 3 suggestions, 3 reminders that hopefully will help you as you attempt to be confident in Jesus. The first one is this. We tend to find our security in temporal, and I'd like to add silly, things. We tend to find our confidence, we tend to find our security in temporal, let me add, silly things. I'm talking about our investments, our IRAs, our 401ks, our homes and the equity that may be built up there, the military might of the United States, that career track job, that advanced degree that you've just finally procured. And what I want to remind us as a church is all of these things, while they might be good and we might be thankful for them, they are an inadequate basis on which to be confident and secure. Please don't misunderstand me. I don't want anybody to walk out of here saying Steve is against retirement accounts. He's not. He's got one. He's not doing well, but he's got one. I hope you have the ability to buy a home. I'm thankful for the military might of the United States, frankly. I'm very thankful for it. I'm thankful for many of you who have found great places of employment and gotten your advanced degrees and you're on a good track. These are good things. But they're temporal and of not lasting eternal significance. And they're an inadequate basis on which to form our spiritual security. I simply want to remind you of that. Look at verse 9 of Psalm 62. I hope you still have your fingers there. I stopped reading in verse 8. Let me just continue for a moment. A few more verses. The psalmist says, low-born men are but a breath. Now, low-born would be a reference to people who are born in poverty. They don't have social standing. They may not have education. And he says they're just a breath. Just poof. The high-born, that'd be people who have a higher standing, more social standing, more education, more wealth. The high-born are but a lie. So here we have the two polar opposites in society, the low-born and the high-born. And what's the psalmist say? If weighed on a balance, we might think it might do something like this, the high-born, the low-born. He says, no, he says, if weighed on a balance, they are nothing. Together, they are only a breath. They're just a breath. It doesn't matter your social status. It doesn't matter if you're low-born, high-born. It doesn't matter if you have a lot of money. It doesn't matter if you have a lot of education. In light of God, they're just a breath. He goes on, do not trust in extortion or take pride in stolen goods. Watch this. Though your riches increase, do not set your heart on them. One thing God has spoken, two things I have heard, that you, O God, are strong. He comes back again to it's all about God, the character of God. You, O God, are strong, and that you, Lord, are loving. Surely you will reward each person according to what he has done. Confidence in the character of God. I believe in the eternal security of the believer, and I hope you do too. I think it's a biblical concept, the perseverance of the saints. This is the idea that the Christian who has placed his or her faith in Jesus cannot lose their salvation, that God will see that salvation through to the end. John chapter 10, verse 28, Jesus said, I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. No one can snatch them out of my hand. And so we teach and believe in the security of the believer in Jesus. I have an opinion that many, many Christians believe that eternal security begins when they die, and that they're responsible for their security from adulthood, let's say 18 years old or something like that. They're responsible for their security from adulthood to death. They'll take care of it, God. Well, I'll be in charge of that segment of that period of time. From adulthood to 80 or 90 years old, I'm in charge, and I'll work on my own security. Then when I die, God, would you take over? That's when I really believe in eternal security. I want you to be the one I can really be confident in and depend on at that point. No, no, no. Absolutely wrong. The Bible teaches, and the Psalms that we've just been reading have taught, that security or confidence or dependence begins when we come into right relationship with God. This is so foundational that we understand that. Second reminder of how you can gain confidence is confidence in God, here's a couple of big words, is both cognitive and existential. It is both something that we believe in and that we experience emotionally. Put a little bit differently, and follow me here, please. To believe in God is not the same as to trust in Him and to find your security in Him. I have no doubt that the vast majority of people in this room have faith. Now, if you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, welcome. We hope you hear the good news of new life in Jesus and give your heart and your life to Him. But most of the people in this room are already believers. And one of the things that I want you to know is that as we have faith in Jesus, it is not always the same thing as trusting and depending on Him daily for all that we have and all that we are. And one of the great lessons we can see in the Psalms is that the psalmists learn a great lesson, that to have faith in God was to become fully dependent on God. I think maybe dependence is the best word. And again, it is entirely based on the character of God, on who God is and not who we are. Hopefully I've been teaching the text and bringing some things to light that are biblically accurate. I want to give you an opinion now, and I'll own it as my own opinion. And if you don't like it, then that's okay. You can just say, "I didn't like that, Steve," and I'll be fine with that. It is my opinion that what we're talking about this evening is uniquely difficult for North American Christians, uniquely difficult for people who have military might, who have great economic ability, who by and large have access to education and to housing and to food and to health care, that everything that we've been looking at is uniquely difficult because of who we are culturally and where we live. And I want to remind you again that we have to understand that to be dependent and confident and find our security in God may mean that we need to strip away some of these things, at least emotionally, and place our full and complete dependence on God. Last reminder, if you are lacking confidence, begin to pray the Psalms of Confidence. We've looked at two or three here in the last couple of minutes. But begin to pray the Psalms of Confidence. Allow the prayers of the psalmist and these beautiful words to become your prayers. You remember the first week that we studied our study in the Psalms, I gave you the illustration of John Newton's great song, his great hymn, Amazing Grace. We sing that every 3 or 4 weeks here, Amazing Grace, and we think of God's grace and love for us. And I told you a little bit about Newton's life, how he was a womanizer and had trouble with alcohol and traded in slaves and led a life that was far from God. And remind yourself that when we sing that song and we sing Amazing Grace and those wonderful words, when we sing that, we don't sit and think, oh, this is all about John Newton. And what a slime he was. Oh God, I'm so glad you saved him. Boy, your grace was amazing to save that guy. We don't do that. When we sing those words become words about our life. Our sin and our disobedience may be different than John Newton's, but we're no less in need of the grace of God. And so we make those words, his words, our words. And that's what the Psalms can do for us, the Psalms of Confidence. Are you lacking confidence? Spend the week praying Psalm 27. Spend the week praying the 23rd Psalm. Pray Psalm 62. Pray Psalm 121. The list goes on. And allow the thoughts and the words and the emotions and the discovery that the psalmist has made to infiltrate your heart and your mind and allow those prayers to become yours. God help us as we live in this world and in this culture and this society. Help us to be people who learn to be dependent upon you. That we find our confidence not in some of the good things in life that we have, but in your sovereign power, in your goodness, and in your love. God, forgive us when we begin to trust in the weapons of our country or our economic portfolio. God, forgive us. Help us to learn the lesson that David has learned, that we're to be confident in you, our rock. In Jesus' name, amen. I'm going to do a couple of announcements and then we're